Today on Vox Talks Economics, is US debt sustainable? Welcome to another of our special episodes recorded at the CEPR Annual Symposium in Paris. My name is Tim Phillips. When does the level of debt in the US become a problem for the economy and for ordinary Americans as well? When it does, what are the policy options to fix it? Ugo Panizza of the Geneva Graduate Institute and Antonio Fattas of INSEAD, both VPs of CEPR, are the authors of a chapter on this topic in the CEPR book, The Economic Consequences of the Second Trump Administration. When we spoke in Paris, I asked them about what the administration needs to do about it and how soon it needs to get on with it. Antonio, welcome.
Thank you.
And hello, Ugo.
Thanks.
What is the level of US debt at the moment? Under pre-Trump policies, what was the trend in US debt?
So the level in dollar is about $38 trillion.
Woohoo.
If we include also debt which is owned by US agency like the Social Security Trust Fund, and it's about $30 trillion if we exclude debt. That makes about 130% of GDP under the first definition, or 100% of GDP under the second definition. So that's the number. And the debt had been increasing already before Trump. So many assessment judged to be the path of the US debt to be on an unsustainable path. That was before Trump.
But a lot of high-income countries have very high levels of debt. Now, is the trend in the US similar to in other countries?
So I think the numbers are not that different. The US is not an outlier. If you look at the numbers, some countries are below, whether it's France or Germany, some countries are above, Italy, the UK, or Japan, which is a lot higher. I think what maybe is more concerning, if you look at the details, some of these countries have had episodes in recent years where the debt has either stabilized or gone down, while the US does not have any of those episodes, at least not clearly visible. So you see more of this constant drift. And that is more concerning because it says, even if you didn't have crisis, you get a sense that the US debt will always go up. While in other countries, at least you see that in good times when economic growth is healthy enough, you have periods where debt is under control and in some cases coming down.
Now, we used to be much more relaxed about this during times of lower interest rates. How much of US GDP is getting paid as interest on debt?
So the number today is already quite high by recent economic historical standards. It's already up to 3% of GDP.
Cool.
That is not a small number. Again, what is more concerning is as you look forward, if you look at the forecast even before Trump, this number was supposed to go to 4, 5, and 6 in a few decades.
Uh-huh.
But those are numbers that are incredibly high and that certainly make the point that with this trajectory, debt is unsustainable.
Now, the ratings agencies have noticed Moody's downgraded the US sovereign credit rating. I don't really understand these things. To AA1 from AAA. What does this actually mean? Is this a big moment?
It means that now all three main rating agencies, which are Standard & Poor's, Fitch, and Moody's, no longer rate the US at the highest possible level. S&P and Fitch had already downgraded the US a while ago. Moody's simply aligned itself with the other rating agencies. It's just recognizing a fact. But it's kind of striking that now what is usually considered the global safe asset doesn't have the highest possible credit rating, which it had for a long time, and now by all three main credit rating agencies.
We first raised the alarm about this problem in 2024. Even before the impact of the recent Trump tax cuts, Giancarlo Corsetti and the Riccardo Trezzi set out the inevitable path of US debt for us and the unpalatable long-run policy options that are the result. In our episode, The US is in a Fiscal Mess, that was September 2024. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to like and subscribe while you're there.
So if we're going to talk about fiscal policy and debt, then there is one big thing that we have to discuss, which is the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I don't know how you pronounce it, the OBAR. That was signed into law in July 2025.
But you know, it was supposed to be in 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 different bills. And I was on one of the fake news shows and I said, let's do it in one big beautiful bill.
As part of that, tax cuts that were meant to expire, they got extended, didn't they? So how big a cost is that in revenues for the US government?
So in dollar term, tax revenues are estimated to drop by about $4.5 trillion over the next 10 years.
Oh.
I'll tell you a number as a percentage of GDP in a moment. And there are also some spending cuts there, which are estimated to about $1.8 trillion. According to the best estimates that we have, the OBA will add about 1.2% of GDP per year to the deficit, about 0.8% in terms of primary deficit and 0.4% in terms of interest payment. So it's a substantial increase in the US deficit brought about by this thing, because tax cuts are much larger than the expected cuts in expenditure.
We also, though, have tariff revenues coming in now. How much will that replace?
That's a good question, and no one has the answer for many reasons. At first, you can do sort of a theoretical calculation. If everyone paid the tax and the imports were the same as before, how much would that be?
Uh-huh.
Now, that might give you a relatively large number, maybe close to 1%, 0.8% of GDP. But the reality is there's a lot of exceptions. People go around. People substitute some goods for others. So the range can be quite large if you try to think about estimates from 0.2 to 0.8% of GDP. But the additional uncertainty is, as we speak, some of these tariffs are changing. Some of these tariffs have been eliminated in recent times because of the US concern on prices from certain products like coffee or bananas. And in addition, the Supreme Court is about to rule whether these tariffs were legal or not.
Yes,
if they're illegal, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think a lot of these things will have to be refunded and we start from zero. And how do you move forward? It is very unclear. Now, it is a number that could be very large under many positive and optimistic assumptions. It will not overcome some of the other effects that are in the bill. But again, the problem is it can be a lot lower as well, given all the uncertainty that we have.
Yeah, it's hard to summarize this bill, but there's spending increases as well.
There are a little bit of spending increases. There are more spending cuts in the OBA. Spending cuts are mostly regressive because they're mostly reduction in some form of social expenditure. So then at the end, the OBA itself will lead to an increase in deficit because, as mentioned, the tax cut are larger than the spending cut.
I want to ask you, in a very optimistic framing of the OBA, is that it delivers growth for the US economy and then its debt becomes sustainable. Can it deliver that sort of growth? How much growth would it have to deliver?
I mean, that's a tough question for academics, for economists, because estimating the growth effects of taxes is not easy.
Uh-huh.
In the short term, it is possible that it will give a boost to demand because you sort of have a bigger deficit. It's a standard fiscal stimulus. Now, how far that goes depends on how close the US is to full employment. So it might not be that large. Now, in the medium to long term, I think the fear is as deficits increase and debt increases, interest rates could increase, and that would crowd out private investment and reduce growth. So there's many estimates that would say if you look beyond the short term, the growth will be slower because of this policy than before the policy was adopted. So that's not going to buy much in terms of debt sustainability, even if in the short run, you might get a little boost to growth.
If we look ahead for 10 years, again, I'm asking you difficult questions, but forecast 10 years ahead, where does this leave the deficit GDP ratio?
So the Congressional Budget Office had already kind of scary estimates of a deficit of 6% of GDP, which is very large.
Uh-huh.
And this could add, again, a further 1% of GDP, so making the deficit indeed very, very large.
There is something coming along to save us, or we thought something was coming along to save us, which was Doge. that initiative to save government expenditure. It was meant to save 2 trillion. I think that's what it was advertised as. Did it?
No, it didn't. So according to some fairly optimistic estimated, it saves about 0.3% of GDP, which is about 9 billion. So way short of 3 trillion.
That's a lot less. What were the practical problems that it ran into?
The US government spends about 7 trillion per year. And only about 1/4 of this expenditure is what we call discretionary. So things which is easier to adjust. The other expenses are social security expenditure, which are mandatory, interest payment, some social programs, which are very hard to touch. And so of this 1/4 of discretionary expenses, about half is defense. And again, there is no intention to touch defense. So these discretionary non-defense expenses, it's 1.8 trillion. So it's very hard to cut 3 trillion even over a period of time out of 1.8 trillion. So that's a basic difficulty.
Did they just not know that?
I mean, I think they did, although maybe some of the people who went into this did not. I think there is sometimes an assumption by people who have never looked at one of these budgets that the discretionary part is large, that the inefficiencies are really, really large. And certainly when we saw Elon Musk making some statements at the beginning of the process, he seemed to have found a lot of money just by dealing with inefficiencies. But the reality, inefficiencies are not as large as these people think. And some of these inefficiencies are not that easy to fix. And a lot of the spending, as Ugo said, are things that are really hard to cut. And I always like that sentence, which I heard from Paul Krugman, that the US government looks like an insurance company with an army. So the majority of the budget is all related to insurance, pensions, healthcare, unemployment benefits. And then there is, of course, the army and interest payments that you cannot avoid doing.
So we have to work out, well, luckily we don't have to work out, but it would be good to try and work out what the policy options are to solve this problem if we believe that debt is unsustainable in the long term in the US. First policy choice is to cut all those social programs, Social Security and Medicare, that's been floated. How effective, how feasible is it to do this?
Well, it's very hard to do. I think it's not optimal, first of all, because you know you need social insurance, and the US already has probably less social insurance than what we think would be optimal. So I don't think it would be desirable, but also politically, I think it's basically impossible because it would touch many people like, for instance, Medicare, which provides health insurance to elderly people. I think it's incredibly popular. I don't think you can cut pensions. So I don't think there is much that can and should be cut there.
It's one of those things that people say, oh, I quite like the sound of that, right until they realize that something that they rely on or their family needs is being cut.
Correct.
I mean, if you compare the US to other countries, again, the level of social insurance the US provides is not very high, but the cost of that insurance is very high because healthcare costs in the US are higher than anywhere else. Again, it's very easy for me to say this right now, but if the US could make their healthcare system as efficient as other countries, that would go a long way to addressing debt sustainability because you're not cutting the provision of those services where you're just making it more efficient. But again, this is an issue that obviously is beyond my own expertise. But that's a number that when you look at the data, obviously it stands out because the US is an outlier.
It will be a brave politician in the United States who goes back into healthcare reform, especially in the direction that you're talking about. So the second policy choice, let inflation rise and we can inflate the debt away. How feasible is this? Can that risk be managed?
Well, that's a very risky choice. You can reduce debt a little bit on impact, but the average maturity of US debt is not super long. And then in the moment, you know, inflation goes up, you know, expectations are going to catch up, interest rates are going to go up. So then in the medium run, you're going to make things even worse, right?
We have the experience after COVID. If you look at many countries, including the US, the inflation boost that we had after COVID has really helped governments reduce debt. And the numbers are not small. I mean, they're important. But again, you cannot keep doing this. You cannot keep surprising people every 5 years with higher inflation because then your interest rates will go much higher. And then at the end, it will backfire and your debt will become more unsustainable.
Policy option three, raise government revenues. More revenues for the government, that means tax rises. What sorts of tax rises would we be considering in this scenario?
The US has a lower tax revenue as a percentage of GDP than other countries across many forms of taxes. So if this was an emerging market and this was an IMF report on this emerging market, it is very likely that the final recommendation would be you have to increase taxes.
Put up taxes, yeah.
Because you are below other countries. And clearly there is room for that. It's not easy politically, but there is room for that. Because of the path of US debt and all the other things we've been discussing, it is not a small number. Depending how you look at it, it might be 3, 4, or 5 percentage points of GDP. That's a really large increase in taxes from a political point of view.
Yes, that's so, a lot larger than a 3, 4, or 5% increase in tax, isn't it? It's many times.
It is many times. So again, that's something that I cannot see it happening in isolation, which I think at the end, my view is that you have to do a little bit of everything. It has to be partly on the spending side, partly on the efficiency side, partly on the tax side. But again, as we know, politics matter more than economics. And the big issue for the US, that's to me the big risk. How do you find the political consensus to find that type of solution, which has to be comprehensive and very complex?
That is my question to you then. How do you find that consensus? Is this something that the US administration can afford to say, well, we're not going to deal with that just yet? Or do we have to try and find a consensus now? And where does that come from?
In my view, when do markets wake up is such a mystery. But that's how governments wake up as well, when sort of the market says, look, this is not working, and you start seeing interest rates going up. And that will wake up the US political dynamics, I think. But it hasn't happened. But it will one day. If you ask me, can they kick the can down the road a little bit more? My view is yes. But one day, they'll hit a wall if the policies look like what they look like today.
And what will that moment of truth look like for US citizens?
Hard to answer. There would be sacrifice to be made, right, from everybody's side. I mean, it's just not a US problem. We are doing this in Paris. We are having similar discussion in France. We're having similar discussion everywhere. So far, markets have been okay, but at some point, something will need to be done. The earlier you do it, the easier it is. The more you wait, the more difficult the adjustment will be. There is this old saying, I don't know who said it, if something cannot go on forever, it won't.
We'll be watching this. All of us are going to be watching this. Thank you very much for talking about it, Antonio and Ugo.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
The chapter is called Fiscal Policy and Debt Sustainability. Authors Antonio Fatas and Ugo Panizza in the book The Economic Consequences of the Second Trump Administration. Editors Gary Gensler, Simon Johnson, Ugo Panizza and Beatrice Veda Di Mauro. It is, of course, a free download from CEPR.org.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, 1 year on, the Trump effect on global trade.